Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Whenever we have a time change, like this morning for daylight savings time, or whenever we go someplace and we change time zones also, I always think it's kind of funny that even though it may take us a little while to get used to it, as far as the universe is concerned, nothing happened, right? Nothing happened. Even though millions of people were at least mildly discombobulated waking up this morning when it was light 1 hour earlier, and tonight will feel a little strange when it gets dark 1 hour earlier, the sun, the moon, the stars, and the planet didn't do anything different than they've been doing for years. I remember a party I went to some years ago, and I had a conversation with a gentleman that I didn't know, and he was kind of adamant about that it was a bad thing to have daylight savings time because he didn't think it was a good idea to take an hour of sunlight away from the farmer's crops for 6 months of the year. Think about that for a minute. Okay? So, I mean, it was a very short conversation, I promise you, whatever. I was afraid he'd start talking about politics, and who knows where that would have gone. So this morning, the only thing that changed is the clock, this machine that we invented that we allow to regulate every aspect of our life, okay? We only took control of the clock long enough to move it back an hour at 2 a.m. or whatever it was, or whatever we did it before we went to bed, and then we put it back on the dresser and we started following our regular schedule. That's what we did. Now, the clock doesn't know that it's in charge of our life. Because it's an inanimate object, right? It goes the same speed it's always done. It reads whatever we set it to read, and the alarm goes off whenever we tell it to. We just decided to shift it an hour this morning, and then we put it back in charge, okay? And if that doesn't demonstrate how easily we can affect our own reality, I don't know what does. Change the clock, and we shifted our whole reality and awareness of light in that. One of my favorite stories about time and our relationship to it comes from a newspaper story I read some years ago, and it was about a coal mining disaster in Germany, and there was a big collapse of an underground tunnel, always a great tragedy, and a number of men were killed, but there were a small number of miners who were trapped in one small section of the mine shaft, and they knew, because they were all experienced miners, that the air was only going to last, you know, 2, maybe 3 days, but there was nothing they could do but wait for help. There wasn't any communication or anything else. Now, as it turned out, as the lights in their lanterns slowly went out, the battery slowly died, only one man was wearing a lighted wristwatch, a wristwatch that you could, you know, read in the dark, okay? So they sat in the dark, waiting for the sound of the rescue workers, not knowing if they were going to be able to find them or not, and every so often the guy would call out the hour, whatever the hour was. However, to keep from the other guys from losing hope, he sort of altered it. I mean, in the dark and everything, you couldn't really tell. So he called out 1 hour every 2 hours. You know what I mean? When 2 hours passed, but he only called 1 hour. And about 4 days later, just after the air would have run out, a day or so later, a rescue team found the trapped miners. They were all unconscious, okay, but they were alive. They were alive. Except for the guy who had the watch. Because he could fool everybody else, but he couldn't fool himself. Because he knew what was actually going on. Very, very interesting. So he had apparently fooled these other people and caused them to change their relationship with what we call real time. Now, if we look all the way back to the 20th century, which seems like a long time ago, if you think about it, we have Albert Einstein. We all remember Dr. Einstein to thank for our awareness that time is neither absolute nor fixed. He used to say, time is relative. There was a reporter who was interviewing once, and he asked him if he could explain the theory of relativity very, very simply for his readers. And Einstein thought for a moment, and he said, when a pretty girl is sitting on your lap, an hour goes by like a minute. But when you're holding your hand over a flame, a minute feels like an hour. That's relativity. I always thought that was kind of clever. Now, we all look at time in a different way. Some of us are always trying to find more of it, though I honestly don't know why, because I believe with most of the people I know, myself included, if we had more time, we probably wouldn't use it to play or to sleep more or to read or to relax. We'd use it to multitask more, right? We'd get three more things done in the time period it would should take one to do. We'd use it to try and get more things done because we are addicted to being busy. That's why we invented the car. Okay? Instead of seeing time as a gift that we can use to enjoy our life, it's become just another substance that we abuse, out of all the many substances that we abuse. So we like to think we're managing it, but most of the time, time is managing us. However, I have come to the conclusion over the last probably 10, 12 years, whatever, since I retired the first time from my first job, whatever it was, that good time management is not about getting more done, like I learned in grad school with the ABC method and the Swiss cheese method and the salami method. You management types all know that. Instead, good time management, I believe, is about spending more time doing things I love and less time doing things I don't. That's what I consider time management now. I mean, after all, when the final moment comes, which it's going to for all of us, I'm probably not going to be looking at my wristwatch, and neither are you. So the time of death that is recorded on our death certificate, even when we die, time, they put a time, you know, a time of death, that doesn't interest me nearly as much as having the time of my life before I die, and I'm sure you guys are all the same. Now, some people suggest that we should make better use of our time by planning it and organizing it, because that way, these people say, we can fit in all the things that we need to do and we're not going to waste any of the moments of our life. And that's certainly the theory. And some very successful money managers, consultants, whatever, have made a lot of money writing books about time management. If you go on Amazon, I checked on it. I was just curious. There were like 7,000 different things, books, classes, CDs, all that stuff. Every single one of them related to time management. But the truth is, in my case at least, I'm not really interested anymore in finding time to do everything that I have to do or need to do. I'm more interested in finding, as the title of my talk today is, time enough to live. And when I say time enough to live, I'm not just talking about time enough to eat and to sleep and to work so I can make enough money to buy a house where I can eat and sleep and get ready to go to work. You know, that kind of cycle. I mean finding time to breathe fresh air in a beautiful place, maybe anywhere in the world. I'm interested in finding time to play a little bit of golf, you know, creating that time, time to walk in the woods, to travel the world, to experience passion and excitement and peace of mind and all of those things on a regular basis. And I want to do it on my schedule, not the world's. My schedule, okay? You see, if we think of time as nothing more than a fixed number of minutes available to every person every day, 60 seconds in a minute, 60 minutes in an hour, 24, you know, the whole routine, we're making the same mistake that people make who are obsessed with money. People who are obsessed with time make the same mistake as people who are obsessed with money. They're confusing quantity with quality. A very big difference. Because a minute spent holding someone we love, a minute spent petting our dog or sitting with your cat on your lap purring, a minute spent on a beautiful beach looking at a sunset is worth far more than a minute spent sitting in Atlanta traffic trying not to be late for a meeting that we don't really want to go to. Those minutes are not the same. A minute spent in the early morning sitting in our beautiful space in our home sipping a cup of warm tea while all we think about is the things we're grateful for that we're going to focus on during the day is much more powerful than being on a treadmill watching CNN or reading the Wall Street Journal. The minutes are not the same. Now, this may sound obvious to some of you, I'm sure. Of course, we all want to spend time doing the things that we like to do. I mean, people don't want to have to go to work. They don't want to sit in traffic, don't want to pay bills, don't want to do all that kind of stuff. We just don't. But how else do we make the money to take care of ourselves and take care of our family and make the house payment and the car payment and the credit card payments and all this other stuff? Because we've all got places to go, people to see, things to do, and not enough time to do it all. Right? Okay? That's the way a lot of people see the world, even some of us sometimes. But the problem is, the dichotomy is, at the spiritual level, we have this wonderful vision of freedom and prosperity and health that we can use to enjoy our life and all the time in the world to do whatever we want. That's the stuff we dream about on Sunday mornings or what we try to visualize during our morning meditations. But a much more accurate description of the way we see our life most of the time is with us at the center, surrounded by a appointments, duties, obligations, and responsibilities. All the things that we have to do, mixed in with the occasional chaos, crisis, and breakdown, which just mixes up the time and condenses it. So we feel like we're constantly being presented with choices between several different things, many of which we don't really want to do or don't have time to do, and we feel overwhelmed, overstressed, and overtired. And we're just trying to survive until the weekend, and then Monday comes, and we start all over again. Meanwhile, because of our consciousness, while we keep attracting and creating more and more of the same, the clock keeps ticking away, not the hours of our day, but the years of our life. That's what's going on. Now, needless to say, that is not a very healthy or constructive way to spend our days, especially if we intend to live a life of our own choosing at some point in the future. Because as Dr. Holmes said, Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of this teaching, if you're here for the first time, and I'm paraphrasing, what he said in a number of different places is, if nothing changes in here, nothing's going to change out there. That's basically what Doug was talking about in his quote. So there's never going to be a perfect time other than now to take control of our life, right this very minute. Now, the good news is, we don't have to struggle to regain control of our schedule. We just need to regain control of our consciousness, right? Of our thought processes, of our beliefs. We just need to begin expanding our awareness around how we are thinking of life, not just our life, but life in general, in the present moment, in this present moment, and this present moment, okay? However, we don't have to start to live in the present moment, okay? Because we already are. We're already living in the present moment. We just forgot it, okay? But there's nowhere else that we can live. So we just need to bring our mind and our heart and our attention and our emotions, all those things that make us us, back to where our body happens to be in the here and now, right? That's what we need to do. And then we need to follow the advice of Ben Franklin, a very wise man who said, if we take care of the minutes, the years will take care of themselves. Very profound, very profound. Now, one good way to think of this is to use the example of an hourglass. We're all familiar with them. We usually have the little egg timer kind of things, but a real old-fashioned hourglass. At the top of the hourglass, there's a certain amount of sand that is moving gradually to the bottom half of the hourglass. That's the principle. But in the middle, there's this little narrow tube of glass that allows, hypothetically, one grain of sand to go through at a time. That's a pretty good metaphor for the way we should be using time. You see, whether we realize it or not, our entire life comes to us one moment at a time. One moment at a time. Now, it's not the only moment in our life, obviously, and in most cases, it's not the most important moment, but it's the only moment we can do anything about. The only moment we can do anything about. Before it comes to us, we can't do a thing with it. After it comes to us, it's gone forever. Gone forever. So even when it feels like everything is trying to happen all at once, the moments only come to us one at a time, but also, coincidentally, so do the problems, the opportunities, the challenges, and the decisions. They come to us one at a time. So that means, if you think about it, at any given moment, we only have one choice to make. Any given moment, we only have one choice to make. But how do we make that choice? That's the interesting part. That's the question we ask. I mean, should we look for the easiest and the most obvious choice? That's what the lazy people do. That's what the passive people do. Or should we think about it logically? That's what the management consultants do. All right. Should we ask our heart or our gut or our intuition what we need to do? That's what the right brain people do. And I know we got a lot of right brain people out there in this kind of a place. Or should we ask God to make a decision for us? That's what the religious people do. But there's another more powerful way to do it. More powerful. The real key to making the best decision at any given moment for us is for us to know, once again, in each moment, who we are, what we love, and what kind of a life we want to live. Those three things. Who we are, what we love, and what kind of a life we want to live. Those three things, used in tandem together, will always produce the most satisfying and effective decision that we can make, primarily because we won't have to go back and straighten things out later. if we do it based on that. So let me talk about those three for a minute. First of all, to know who we are, using a Halloween metaphor, since we just had Halloween, we need to stop hiding behind our mask, a Halloween metaphor, and begin to show both the world and ourself our real self. You know, when I say our real self, I mean the one who is smart and funny and loving and creative and sexy, but also the one who makes mistakes and loses his temper on Georgia 400 when the traffic is bad, and even gets scared, I guess you say in the South, from time to time. And we do this because if we make our individual choices based on someone we are not, there's a good chance we'll end up living someone else's life instead of our own, which not only wastes our time in the short term, it can waste years of our life. Absolutely years of our life. There are people that spend years of their life being somebody else. Now, next, if we make every decision based on what we truly love, and you have to know what you love, so that takes a little thought beforehand, but if we make every decision based on what we truly love, we will soon find out that more and more of the things we love will start finding their way into our schedule. They will. And what's really cool is when they start squeezing the other stuff out. That's when it's really, really great, okay? I mean, think of your life choices as an assembly line. Remember that I Love Lucy episode with the cakes? You know, that kept going faster and faster. Well, forget the faster and faster, but think about sitting in front of that kind of an assembly line with the choices of your life passing in front of you one at a time. And as each item or each choice passes in front of you, okay, either accept it or reject it. That's not too hard. Single moment, accept or reject. If you love it, it stays. If you don't love it, it goes. Very, very simple. Now, there may be a few things pass by where you're not really sure and you're going to have to take your best guess. But the more things we let into our life that don't feed our soul, the more things we let into our life that we don't truly love, the longer it's going to take to dig those things out later when we try to get rid of them, okay? When we want to finally throw them away, especially if we've been carrying them around for years. Finally, in making our choices based on the kind of life we want to live, that was number three, that part is actually pretty easy. And all of us know how to do it. If we want more playtime in our life, we should make more playful choices. That's pretty easy, isn't it? If we want more time for love in our life, we should make more loving choices, right, everybody? If we want more financial freedom in our life, we should make more prosperous choices. If we want to spend our life living a healthier lifestyle, we should make healthier choices, whether that's what we eat, sleep, drink, whatever it happens to be. Now, once again, this all may seem obvious, and it is, at least theoretically, but whenever we fail to make a good decision in the present moment, for whatever reason, whether we're rushed, whether we're not paying attention, whatever it is, we waste an opportunity to build the kind of life that we want to. When we waste our time by doing things we don't really love to do, we waste our future by not choosing the life that we want to enjoy going forward. Now, I've also noticed through the years that the people who complain the most about not having enough time are the ones who make the worst use of it. Okay? Of course, since I try to be honest with myself, I try to walk the talk in this teaching, I am fully aware that this also applies to me. So let me give you a personal example of this. You can ask my wife for one, but I'll give you one instead, okay? She could probably give you several. Whenever I feel like complaining about having too much to do and not enough time to do it in, and I feel the need to talk to the person responsible, I go over to the nearest mirror, okay, and I look myself in the eye and I say, okay, sweetheart, who put you in this situation, okay, and whom do you expect to get you out? Now, that doesn't necessarily solve it. Frequently, my first reaction in this conversation with myself is, you know, there's a lot of things happening at work, and a lot of people are putting demands on me, and I have all these responsibilities, and I have to get my car fixed tomorrow, and I got a dental appointment, and on, and blah, blah, blah. And I am sincere, articulate, and very convincing in talking to myself. But no matter what I say to myself, the truth always is that made a series of decisions, one at a time, that put me in the position that I am now in that I don't want to be in. I did it to myself. I know this, okay? And now I'm paying the price. And as I think back, I realize that I probably made my decisions based on somebody else's preference, somebody else's opinion, or I was ignoring my own spiritual priorities every single time, knowing that I was not only overextending myself, I was building up the potential for resentment. But I did it anyway, even though I'm supposed to know better, okay? So I'm there. How do I get out of this situation, all right, of not having enough time, being stuck? We've all felt that. Well, assuming I can't cancel or reschedule anything, and I've become much more willing to do those things in recent years than I was before, assuming I can't cancel or reschedule, the first thing I do is to accept complete personal responsibility for my situation. Okay, that's the first thing I do. And I've actually gotten pretty good at that because I've put myself in this situation so often. Anyway, the next thing I do is I forgive myself for doing what I have done to myself, and I express gratitude for the lesson it is allowing me to learn. That one's hard, okay, but that's what I do. Then I make the conscious and deliberate decision to enjoy every moment of the experience I have created as much as I can while remembering not to make the same mistake the next time. All right. Now, this doesn't necessarily change the situation I'm going through. In fact, it almost never does. But it does change the way I experience the experience. Get the difference? It changes the way I experience the experience. It changes my perception. It changes my attitude. It changes my focus. And instead of feeling trapped in an unpleasant situation and being stressed out and upset about it, I allow myself to be open and aware, self-aware, and at peace while spending my time in an experience of my own choosing. That way I'm spending time, the time becomes a gift instead of a punishment. That's what it does. You see, in spite of all the proverbs we've been taught from childhood, like Doug said, time flies. No, it doesn't. Time doesn't fly. Time doesn't drag. We do. We do. Okay? I mean, in dreams, think about your dreams. Anybody remember a dream from last night or the last couple nights? You know, in dreams, we go from hyperspeed, David's got one, hyperspeed, slow motion, back and forth. The future can become the past can become the future, and it all seems perfectly normal while we're asleep. Okay? But then the alarm goes off, and we wake up, and the clock on the nightstand becomes our reality once again. Now, the question is one more real than the other? Because it all takes place in here, right? Good question, okay? Maybe, maybe not. Most of the great spiritual teachers of all the great philosophies and religions and spiritual disciplines tried to teach us that time as a fixed process is an illusion. It's an illusion, okay? One of the masters in India, I love this, it's a small paragraph, he once told his followers, get this, it's great, he says, "You have enclosed yourself in the prison of time and space, squeezing your experience into the span of a lifetime and the volume of a body." Isn't that great? He says, "It is because of this self-imposed illusion that all your conflicts arise. Life and death, pain and pleasure, hope and fear. To end these problems, you need to end the illusion." You need to end the illusion. We need to end it. He's not talking about an illusion out there like a mirage. He's talking about the illusion in here, the illusion in our mind. Now, as a typical Westerner, which I am and many of you are, with a watch, a smartphone, and a clock in my car, my computer, and everywhere else I go, including carrying my phone around and all that stuff, you might ask, what illusion? I mean, time is time, okay? We've all got the same amount. Which is certainly true, at least at one level. Okay, we're all living in the same physical universe. Okay, we're all part of the same one life, which as we know is the spiritual life that we call God. We're all a part of that. But we don't all live that life the same way. Okay, how we choose to live it makes a difference. For example, stress, which is frequently time related, ages us. Scientists who do these kind of things were working with rats, okay? And they found out that rats that were exposed to high levels of stress would die 75% sooner than the ones who weren't. Very, very interesting. That's why I like what Lily Tomlin once said. She said, the trouble with winning the rat race is, even if you win, you're still a rat, okay? Look at the highway driving around, okay? Now, another thing, anger is frequently related by to time frustrations, people getting in front of us and slowing us down. Anger poisons us. It chemically changes our blood tissue, makes it more acidic, so it starts to eat away the tissues of our body. Then another two biggies, fear and resentment, okay? These show up in the body as cancer. Loneliness shows up in the body as heart disease, like dying of a broken heart. So as a result, the number of years that we eventually spend on the planet seems to depend upon not the number of hours and days and our genetics and all the other stuff, but how we live. How we live emotionally, spiritually, mentally, all these things. Statistics show, you've seen them, that people who are in loving, committed relationships with close ties to their family and their friends live longer and healthier lives than those who don't. They do. The statistics point it out. But the length of life isn't nearly as important as the quality of the overall life experience. Time spent in a peaceful and relaxed state of mind allows us to be more aware. It allows us to experience more of the world than we might otherwise have noticed. When we're calm and relaxed, we see things and we hear things and we sense things that we couldn't possibly notice if we were rushing through the day trying to get more stuff done. That's why Gandhi said, there is more to life than increasing its speed. Or for you Southern types, as I once heard, if you're going down the wrong road, going faster doesn't help. Okay? I like that one. Even if we do things, wild and crazy things, loud and dangerous things, okay, like skydiving or motorcycle riding or riding a roller coaster, going to Six Flags, whatever, if it's something we love to do, it opens us up to our better self. It opens us up to our creative self, to our God self. That's the self we are, and that's the self we want to be, okay? It allows our body and our emotions to heal in ways that being busy and filling squares can never do. Never, ever, ever do. There was a great inventor in the last century by the name of Buckminster Fuller. Some of you familiar with him? Bucky Fuller, interesting guy. He once made the very astute observation that human beings are the only creatures on the planet who tell time and believe they have to earn a living. The only creatures on the entire planet. And he's got a good point. I know because I have a mentor who teaches me about time. A mentor. His name is Chester. He's 10 years old, and he's a cat. Okay? I've had him from 10 weeks. He's now 10 years old. All he does is play and eat and sleep and poop occasionally. He goes in there, whatever. Of course, he has me working for him to clean his litter, buy him food and all that kind of stuff, which is a good deal. But in return, he greets me at the door when I come home, which is pretty unusual for a cat. He sits in my lap when I read and goes to sleep and purrs, and he sleeps snuggled up close to us every single night. Okay, that's a fair trade-off for me, okay? Now, he doesn't own a watch, and he can't tell time, okay? But he is one happy little guy. He really, really is. So I have made him one of my mentors. Ernest Holmes, Raymond Charles Barker, Kennedy Schultz, Chester. Chester Gagne, okay? All right? And I strive to be as happy as he is on a regular basis. He's a constant lesson when I'm in the house. Now, I probably won't be throwing my watch and my iPhone away anytime soon, but I have every intention of making every minute of my life from this moment on a minute that I enjoy. And I support you in doing the same, because this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. A little different in our meditation here. Many of you saw the letter that went out last week, and where I announced that I am setting my retirement in motion as of April 1st. And I'm not going anywhere. I'm not disappearing. I'm going to step down from speaking every week so I can have a little more freedom with my weekends at this point in my life. And we're going to have a meeting after this service for anyone who wants to ask any questions. The board is working with this, and it's all in motion. And I've got a lot of friends here, and I will tell you this much, which we'll say in the meeting too, but for those of you who can't stay for the meeting, nothing has gone wrong. We're in great shape here with the center. I love doing this. I just want a little more freedom. with it at this point, which is great. But I want us to have a center when I leave that I want to come back to on a regular basis. So, and that way I think we'll all be happy. So I'm going to do a treatment of meditation right now to just know that everything's good, everything's in perfect order, not just with this, but with everything in our life and in the world. So I invite you, if you will, to take a moment, get comfortable in whatever way that suits you, and know this with me. I know that life is an amazing experience, constantly changing, constantly flowing. I recognize that there is a spiritual essence to life that touches everything. Indeed, it is everything. I know that this essence is in me and that I am a part of it. All is one. This is true with the center. It's true with all of our individual lives. It's true with the cities and the countries and all the different ways in which life interacts on this planet. So as I become aware of this, I look at the experiences that I create, that I participate in, that I try to improve simply by bringing my consciousness to it, and I realize that the universe is in perfect order because order is heaven's first law. The universe is in order. It's not a predictable order. It's not necessarily an understandable order sometimes, but it is in order. There is an intelligence that has created all life and all matter out of itself. And that life is constantly growing and expanding. From the millions of years ago to the millions of years from now, that constant evolution, not just of thought or of form, that constant evolution of consciousness is always at work. And whenever we recognize this and we work with it, good things happen. When we stop fighting the confusion that we ourselves have either attracted or created, when we stop fighting, trying to force the world into being a certain way, we can allow ourselves to be in the flow. And as we are in the flow, we can be like a surfer or a skier, gently moving up and down with the waves and the changes, but always being centered, always having perfect equanimity, perfect balance here in our heart and in our mind as we look at the people around us with love and respect. We look at the people that we see on Facebook or in the news or anywhere else, no matter what they're going through, no matter what we're going through, and we see them as spiritual beings in this human experience. So as we do this, we begin to create a life that we love to live. And for many of us, this center is part of that. We love the opportunity to come here and to share this time with like-minded people, to share ideas, to listen, to think, to agree, to disagree, whatever it happens to be. It doesn't matter as long as we're open. So we commit to being open spiritually, open to a smooth transition in this center, open to a smooth transition in our own lives in every area that we happen to be dealing with right now. And as we do all this and know all this, we give thanks. Deep gratitude, not just during this month where we're recognizing gratitude specifically, but gratitude all the time, in the moment, in the present moment. That should be our number one, not even a choice. It needs to be part of the energy. Gratitude is part of the energy of every moment we live and every choice we make. So knowing this, we release these ideas into consciousness, into the one mind, knowing that they move forward and spread and expand and touch everyone around us. That is the power we have. We are grateful for it and release it into consciousness, knowing it is so for all of us all the time. And so it is. All right.